Seeing how right he is. I have Facebook friends that post pictures of their children with little month signs on the baby's tummy. For only a second, I imagine Stephen holding his sign. So, are you a giant baby? Before he answers, I add, and what do you want for your 361st month birthday? Nothing. I'm not a giant baby. I think it's somewhere over 30 months when you cease to be a baby and become a kid. He points at his chest. I've moved into man status. Yes, I'm glad to hear that. It's my nephew, Landon. He's this little football player. Stephen lowers his voice. He's only like 10 or 12 months, not quite a year, and he has all these adorable wrinkles on his chubby arms and legs. His dad thinks he's going to be an offensive lineman, but little Landon and I had a talk. Oh, no. Yes, girl, we did. He wants to take after Uncle Stephen. He's already interested in the arts. He kept pushing the button on this toy and playing the same song over and over. I see show choir in his future. Then, of course, the costumes will instill a love for fashion. In fashion design, he's going to be king. We'll start our own design company. Should I ask about your brother-in-law's thoughts on this? He'll get over the offensive line thing. Too many injuries. Fashion design is safer. How does your sister feel about the change of plans? Stephen waves me off. We didn't include her in the conversation. What mothers don't know won't hurt them. I smile, looking at my screen and seeing an email from Beth Willis. Subject line, best cannoli. Yes, sometimes it might be better to keep mothers in the dark. I mean, I'm sure her recipe is good, but I personally believe I've found the best. It's then I see the email from Neil Butler, our supervisor in London. My stomach twists as my cursor hovers over his name. Is it the Neil email you're talking about? Stephen nods. What does it say? Who am I, your assistant? He asks. Well, technically, yes. The email is to both of us. He wants to have a conference call with us and HR in London tomorrow. He needs confirmation that we can both be on the call. Instead of opening the email, I lean back in the chair. Do you think this is good or bad? I guess it depends on your definition of those evaluations. When Stephen turns his chair with his back to me, I remember the text I sent him. Hey, you never returned my text message. Yes, I did. I pull out my phone and see that the sound is still muted from Trevor's and my no plans weekend. Scrolling, I find Stephen's response. My mom says hi back. She said she missed seeing you. Oh, what secret? The timestamp is this morning. When I look up, he's staring at me from the corner of his eye. You finally replied, this morning? I've been a little busy. You just read it this morning. What aren't you telling me? He spins my direction with an exaggerated exhale. A lot, and it's killing me. I'm sorry, but your plate is a little full, and I wanted you to concentrate on your weekend with Mr. Sexy. You know, when you aren't thinking about here. You don't need to think about me.
Stephen, that's not how friendship works. You know what's happening with me.
His eyebrows dance. Bunny rabbit sex. He sits taller. How did he like the negligee? He didn't think it was too forward, did he? Oh, do tell.
Warmth fills not only my cheeks, but my body, as I recall Trevor's private fashion show and what came after it. He thought it was okay.
No way. Okay was not that man's assessment.
My grin grows larger. He seemed to like it a lot.
And not too forward?
I shrug. The negligee wasn't. I might have been. That time. He picks up a small tablet from the top of his desk and begins to fan himself.
Save the details for lunch. Give me something to look forward to.
No details. Use your imagination.
I'll save that until lunch, too. Otherwise, I won't be able to concentrate.
I turn back to my computer screen. Are you free tomorrow at 9? That's a good time for both time zones. After Stephen checks his schedule, we both agree on 9:30, and I reply to Mr. Butler. Stephen, Vicky says, leaning her head through the doorway, we need you in conference room 4.
What's happening in conference room 4? I ask after she's gone. If I'm lucky, it'll be an announcement that Saks is expanding into men's lingerie.
When he stands, he goes on,
you know, Speedo-esque G-strings and thongs for men.
Those are on the market. His grin grows as he grabs his tablet to leave.
Preaching to the choir.
Once he's gone, I sit back and spend the next 3 hours replying to emails and fighting fires across the Atlantic. While Stephen and I have been in New York, our positions have remained vacated in London. It isn't like the junior department ceased to exist simply because we were on another continent. Some of the emails deserve one response, while others create a complicated string with attachments and multiple copies. As the last fire begins to sputter out, I lean back and sigh. It's a strange sensation, or should I say a recently unfamiliar one. It feels good to make decisions and be in charge. I didn't realize how much I missed what we'd accomplished in juniors. In the 2 years we've been in our positions, Stephen and I have made a name for ourselves. For a few hours on Monday morning, I was reminded of what that was like. I look up toward the door as Stephen returns with Vicky by his side.
Shayna, don't forget, she says, meeting at 1:30 with purchasing.
I click on the folder on my desktop to retrieve the data I've prepared. I'm ready. See you then, I say, trying my most unbitchy voice.
I won't be there. I'm sure you can handle it.
And with that, she's gone. That woman hates me.
I think she's scared of you, Stephen offers.
What was your meeting about?
Well, it wasn't about branching into men's sexy attire.
When I don't respond, he continues.
It was about the sales website. They want to spice up the way customers can see the products online.
You know, we don't have to be a team. You have so much to offer beyond me.
Are you trying to get rid of me, just as we're about to go to lunch and discuss our crazy sexed weekends?
I'd never want to get rid of... I process his words. Wait, what did you just say? You had a crazy sexed up weekend at your parents' house? He tilts his head toward the door.
Come on, I'm starving.
The clock on my computer says I have 1 hour and 15 minutes until my meeting. I need to be back a little after one. Stephen nods. If we don't have time for all your details, this conversation is extending to after work.
Sorry, boss lady. You only get me during working hours. Tonight, I have a date.
Chapter 29. Trevor. Shayna stares at me pointedly as we sit across the table from one another at a quaint little pub near my apartment. Truth be told, I've exhausted my repertoire of cooking skills, and people can only eat so much pizza. Thankfully, we had Kimber's cooking yesterday, and Shayna has offered more than once to cook, but my cupboards are bare. And I'd rather spend time with Shayna doing things other than shopping for groceries.
He said you knew. Why didn't you say anything? She asks.
Why didn't I say anything? Shayna's lips come together as her eyes widen. You're asking me why I didn't say anything to you about Max still being in town.
Yes, Trevor, that's exactly what I'm asking. Now that we have that cleared up, can we move on to your answer?
I grin as I take a small drink of my beer. It's a local craft with a dark color and a surprisingly non-hoppy taste. After I swallow, I look again at the feisty lady staring me down. If I thought she was really upset, I wouldn't take this so lightly. The way she started the conversation with, "Oh my God, wait until I tell you what's happening with Stephen," is what has given me this pass. You know you're cute when you try to be snippy?
I'm not trying to be snippy. One of my best friends had a relationship crisis,
which, may I interject, was never explained to me. All I knew was that the two of you ran out of the bar after you got more than snippy with Max. Shayna takes another bite of her french fries before answering.
It wasn't up to me to tell. I couldn't betray his trust. After all, you were a friend of the enemy.
Max and I are still friends, I say.
The difference is that apparently now he's no longer the enemy.
I think about how Max hasn't called me today, how I'm waiting to hear from his investors in his firm about McCobb's proposal. Maybe now he is my enemy? I need to give that some more thought.
Okay, can you tell me now? First, tell me why you didn't tell me he was still in town.
Shayna, when did we discuss Max and Stephen before tonight? I asked what happened the night we met at the bar. You mentioned pond scum and then said you couldn't talk about it.
Yes, I met with Max last Friday, but how was I to know that you didn't know he was here?
He and I talked mostly about business, and if I need to be perfectly blunt, from the moment you arrived in my apartment last Friday night until you rushed out this morning, talking about business or Max or even Stephen wasn't high on my agenda.
Her cheeks rise as she leans forward. I do my best to keep my eyes on hers. After all, they're bright and blue and beautiful. It's just that if I move my gaze slightly down, her blouse has a great neckline that gives me a hint of her perky breasts below. When our eyes meet again, she shakes her head at me. What? I ask innocently. If I didn't know better, I'd think your agenda hasn't changed. I confess, Shayna Price, I'm crazy about you, and if we follow my agenda after we finish this meal, we'll go back to my place and continue not talking about anyone else. I'm okay with not talking at all. Personally, I like those noises you make when you're too consumed to talk. With each word I say, pink fills her cheeks until they're both as red and rosy as my grandmother's, who used to wear way too much rouge. It's not that I'm an expert on makeup, but I remember the term rouge because my mom always thought it was funny. Trevor, I can't stay at your place tonight. All my work clothes are at the hotel. She looks down. As it is, I wore the same outfit I wore to Kimbra's to work today. Would it be too forward to offer to pack my own bag and accompany you to your hotel suite? I guess I do owe you one night for the night in Indianapolis. Best night of my life, I say. Really? We didn't do anything. I reach for her hand and lift it until her knuckles reach my lips. Yes, we did, my lady. We met. She lets out a long breath. Of course you can stay. I need to gather all my things in your apartment anyway. I'm afraid some of my clothes may have gone MIA. The case of the missing panties, I say with a scoff. If you're thinking of writing a romance, I suggest another title. That was a mystery. Speaking of mysteries, will you tell me what's happening or happened with Max and Steven? Shayna sits back, her expression a multitude of emotions as she explains how Max and Steven met nearly a year ago in London. It was through a mutual friend. That friend was Max's assistant. The assistant and Steven were friends since college. The assistant, his name is Charles, moved to London a few years before Steven and Shayna. Wait, Charles Mills? I ask. Yes, how do you know that? I met Max through my work. His investment company has financed projects I've been directly involved with for Macabre Engineering. I've spoken to Charles before when I've called Max. At work? Yes, I answer suspiciously. I have Max's cell phone number, but not a number for his flat. Shayna leans across the table. You're a smart man. Do you see where this is going? Charles set Steven and Max up. They hit it off. Charles wasn't happy? Shayna shrugs. When the incident happened, I didn't think to question. I mean, if you were to walk into my apartment and my assistant was in my shower, would you stick around to ask him why or his intentions? Intentions, I say, remembering that Max had used the same word when we'd spoken. What were his intentions? Whose, Max or Charles? I savor the question, enjoying the puzzle Shayna's created. Let me guess, I say. From Max's point of view, he had honorable intentions for having Charles at his flat, but Steven didn't take the time to find out. So it now seems, Shayna confirms. I don't know Charles's intentions. All I know is that Max fired him. There's no sexual harassment suit pending, so that in itself speaks for Max's intentions. Charles told him a sob story about a broken pipe at his place. He then purposely set up a message that appeared to come from Max to Steven. I nod my head. For the record, I'd wait for him to get his ass out of your shower, but then I'd question him. I don't think he's your type. Who? Steven. You asked me what I'd do if I found him in your shower. Shayna giggles as she finishes her glass of wine. He's not. I'm not his type either. Max is. She sighs. That's the thing that made their breakup so upsetting. When they were together, Steven was so happy. I guess it is the bunny rabbit sex. I tilt my head. Do I want to know what that is? Just go with it. I promise you aren't complaining. Now they're back together? They are so back together, Shayna says, that Max went with Steven last weekend to meet his parents and sister. Steven's phone is full of pictures with Max and Landon. Who's Landon? Steven's baby nephew. Max Cantell held a baby? According to Steven, Shayna says, he held him a lot, and the baby loved him. If you ask me, Steven has baby fever. I can't stop my grin as I take in Shayna's excitement for her friend. You know, you really are a great friend. She shrugs. I have a lot of people who I consider friends, but only a few really good friends. When someone makes it to that level, I want only the best for them, even if that means it's not the best for me. What do you mean? Steven and I have a telephone call in the morning with our boss in London. I've decided that if by some miracle I get this job here, I'm giving my full support for Steven to be hired in my previous position in juniors. I'll miss him like crazy, but he's good. He's very good at what he does. I'm not sure how I'll manage without him. The most important thing is for him to be recognized for his talents. And if you add Max to that mix, my best friend will be happy. What makes you happy, Shayna? Right now, it's you. I like that answer. I leave cash in the small folder with our bill and reach for her hand. Shall we find those missing panties? Her eyes grow wide as her head moves from side to side, checking to see if anyone heard.
Think of it as a mystery,
I say in a stage whisper.
I'd rather think of it as a romance.
I lean close to her ear. Is there a lot of sex in those books you read?
It depends on the book.
With a title like The Case of the Missing Panties, I think there should be sex.
I agree, Mr. Willis. How else would they be missing?
Chapter 30. Shayna.
I can't believe they're taking this to the final buzzer, Trevor says through my phone. Though his sports reference isn't lost on me, I'm too worried about what is about to happen to reply right away. Unable to sit still, I grip my phone tighter as I pace around Stevens in my temporary office that is no longer. All of our things are packed and ready for our flight. According to the people with Saks who organize our travel, with the royal wedding about to occur, there is no turning back on our pre-booked flights. If we did, we wouldn't get another flight for over a week, which doesn't sound bad to me, and the increase in cost would be astronomical, which sounds bad to them. Even my hotel room is packed. I know that I'm leaving, I say to Trevor, but I wish I knew if I were coming back.
Listen, I know you've worked for Saks for a long time. I know you love the company, but in my opinion, the way they've treated you on this is shitty. They flew you over because they needed someone to save the day, and you did it. You and Steven took what they gave you and made a kick-ass fashion show. Not only did you tweak it and make it a grand production, but when it was needed, you did what that woman Vicky could never do. You put yourself out there as a model. Despite the way my temples are pounding with this tension headache, the tips of my lips turn upward.
Are you a fashion show connoisseur?
And a self-appointed model connoisseur. As luck would have it, I've been witness to two fashion shows in the last 2 weeks. The first one was definitely kick-ass, with music and a stage and many stunning models. But the second one, he lets out a long hum as if he's reminiscing. It had music from the window, no stage, and the most sensational model I've ever seen. That one was phenomenal.
I'm glad you liked it. However, if fashion shows are judged on sales, the first one sold more.
That's okay, my lady. The second one sold me.
Vicky's assistant taps on the open door. Miss Price, they're ready for you. Trevor, I need to go.
I love you. You can do this.
My mouth goes dry and my entire body freezes. Did he just say that he loves me? I can't respond.
Shayna, you can do this.
Trevor?
Call me. I'll be waiting.
And the line goes dead. Holy shit. Dropping those three words on me isn't what I need seconds before walking into this meeting, as if I don't have enough things to think about. And then I let his words sink in, and for a moment, take time to smile. He did it. For only a split second, Trevor took my mind off this job. He reminded me that there's more to life than what is going to happen in this meeting. I'm not sure if that was his intention. Nevertheless, it worked. As I walk toward the conference room of my destiny, I remember the call Stephen and I had with Neil Butler. Our boss and juniors made his case clear. He wants us back. He wants both of us, and he's even worked out the numbers to put the money where his mouth is. He's heard the rumors about us moving to lingerie and worked to receive authorization to increase our salary to match what we would make in lingerie. The kicker is that it would be in London. We'd be going back to stay. During the phone call, I broached the subject of Stephen returning on his own and hiring his own assistant. While Stephen still scoffs at the idea, Neil didn't reject it. Now it seems that the only factor separating the two positions is location. Or is it? In London, I'll report to Neil, the man who went out of his way to facilitate our return. In New York, I'll report to...
Hello, Vicky, I say, greeting everyone around the table as I enter the conference room. Stephen hands me a small-stemmed glass and a tiny wine bottle as our plane reaches cruising altitude over the Atlantic Ocean.
You can't regret trying.
That's what they say, I reply, my eyes still puffy and my damn nose running like a faucet.
You made the right decision.
I turn his way. I don't know. You could have had Junior's all to yourself. You'd be in London with Max, and if I'd taken what she offered, I'd be in New York. The words are like the twisting of a knife in my heart. I'm not in New York, and it's my fault.
It was a bullshit offer.
I finish pouring the contents of the small bottle into my glass and nod. It was worse than a bullshit offer. Move to the children's department with the title I had before I left for London, including a 20% decrease in salary and loss of my PTO, paid time off. I turn his way, my voice growing louder. What kind of bullshit offer is that? Stephen's arm comes up and around my shoulder.
It's a suckballs bullshit offer. It's worse than that. It's a sucking hairy balls bullshit offer.
She couldn't deny the numbers, I say. She wanted to, but there they were in black and white. In the room full of people, she couldn't kick me out after all we accomplished. So instead, she came up with this shitty hairy balls offer.
And you told her what to do with it?
For a moment, I admit, I was so flabbergasted, I couldn't comprehend what she had said. It didn't make sense. I started in juniors. Juniors is ahead of children's on the hierarchy of departments. She wanted to demote me to children and decrease my pay.
Because you scare her. She sees your passion and talent. She's intimidated.
I set my glass within the indented circle on my small tray and let my face fall forward. For a second, I almost took it.
I know, honey.
Tears fill my eyes as my shoulders shudder. I wanted to stay. Stephen waits until I've quieted a little before offering me his napkin.
Here, your impersonation of a raccoon is getting too real. I think there's some TSA regulation about wild animals on planes.
Though I don't give a damn about my mascara, I take his napkin. In two dabs, it's covered in black.
I barely got to see him, I say between sobs. I had tried so hard to have hope. And when Vicky said she had an offer, before it was laid out, I did. It was all right there.
Stephen isn't holding my shoulder any longer, but his hand is covering mine.
What was all there?
You know, the dream. The whole entire picture. I never realized how badly I wanted it. I never let myself think about it. My goal has always been my career. I've worked my ass off to get where I am.
Stephen nods as he hands me my wine.
You have. It's like it's nearly totally gone.
What?
Your ass. You don't even have one.
He nods.
Legs straight to back.
I shake my head.
It was there. I could see it.
I find Pilates helps.
Stephen, I'm talking about the dream, the career, and that someone special. I could get used to spending all my non-working time with him. I did. In 2 damn weeks, I got used to it, falling asleep and waking. Simple things like standing side by side when we brushed our teeth, having morning coffee. I know it's dumb, but it was...
It was, I go on, as in past tense.
It's over. I gave it up to not lose 20% in salary and my paid days off.
No, you didn't. That decrease she offered you was based on your current salary. It's not based on the increase Neil offered. By not accepting her offer, not only did your income not decrease by 20%, but also it is going to be increasing another 15%. And besides the money, Stephen continues, you're back on point in juniors. Your title hasn't changed for the worse. And one more thing, you're working where you're appreciated.
Suddenly, I have a thought.
Vicky talked to you first. Did you know what she would offer me before it happened? No, not exactly.
What does that mean? I ask.
Boss lady, before you went in there, I told her what I've told you. We are a team. I'm not upset about the way this went. I'm moving back to London, we're still together, and I too am getting that 15% increase that Neil offered.
He obviously didn't know what was going down in New York. He could have had us,
or he did, Stephen suggests, and he was afraid which Vicky might turn you against the company as a whole, and he didn't want to lose you.
How can you always make me feel better?
It's in my job description, Stephen says with a smile. And for the record, I know that this time with Trevor, this time leaving for London, it will be different.
I want that. It's just that as I was leaving, he seemed so, I don't know the right word, distracted.
Maybe he was holding out for the same dream. You know how those macho men are. I scoff. Like you? Yes, exactly like me. Stephen covers my hand again. No. Macho men want to fix everything. Your man is a planner and a builder. My guess is that he seemed distracted because that was what his man mind was doing. Instead of giving you his full attention, he was figuring and contemplating. You know, like with the bridges and roads.
I sigh, recalling how Trevor kept looking at his phone instead of at me. I know that's a modern-day issue with everyone, but we were standing at JFK outside of security. Our kiss goodbye was about as romantic as a brother kissing his sister. Okay, it was a little better than that because it was on the lips, and that would be... ew. May I get you more wine? The flight attendant asks, looking my way. Oh, the answer to that question for the entire flight is yes, I say. And even if you have to wake me, it's still yes.
She'll have one more for now, Stephen interjects, lifting one finger to emphasize his point.
And for you, sir?
One also, for now. Thank you.
You're not my babysitter, I remind him after she walks away.
No, I am your assistant. We're not in a hotel room with pizza. We can't exactly follow your mother's rule with pretzels and peanuts. It's my job to keep you in a state that will allow you to walk off the plane because we're not losing our new increase in salary or giving Witch Vicky ammunition to point fingers.
Leaning my head on Stephen's shoulders, I close my eyes. I love you.
I love you too.
It's then I remember Trevor's words on the telephone, and I reach for my purse, grabbing my phone.
What are you doing? Stephen asks. You can't call or text from up here.
No, but I can send an email. The airline has internet. He covers my hand with his.
Maybe we shouldn't drunken email from 50,000 feet.
It's not drunken emailing. It's saying what I should have said this afternoon. I squint my eyes, but the letters and icons on the screen are still blurry. Thrusting my phone toward Stephen, I say, You are my assistant. Connect me to the internet and find Trevor's email.
Shayna, is this a good idea?
My assistant. A few minutes later, he hands me back my phone.
You're connected to Wi-Fi. I have Trevor Willis's email. Are you sure you want to do this?
I take my phone and with one eye closed, carefully type out my message. Trevor, I didn't want to leave you. I hope we can do this long distance. No matter what happens, I heard you this afternoon. I'm sorry I didn't say it too. My silence wasn't because I don't, but because I was shocked that you said it. Just so you know and never doubt, I love you too. Yours, Shayna.
I hit send before I can change my mind and hand my phone back to Stephen.
Can you disconnect the Wi-Fi?
Yes, boss lady, it's very difficult. It's called airplane mode.
I lay my head back on his shoulder and close my eyes. See, that's why we're a great team. Chapter 31. Shayna. There's nothing like sleeping in your own bed. That saying is true. Since we landed at Heathrow Airport on Saturday morning and Ubered to our respective homes, it's what I've been doing. Of course, because it's all I've been doing, I have no food in my apartment. Well, other than a few open boxes of cereal that may or may not be stale upon my return. The only thing worth trying to consume in the refrigerator, since I can't exactly drink condiments, is apple juice, and if I were a betting woman, I'd wager that it is close to fermentation at this point. Basically, the only safe risks are the water bottles, but they don't do much for nourishment. With the exception of the sandwich and chips Stephen brought over Saturday night, I haven't given eating too much thought. Or unpacking. Or shopping for food. Or doing laundry. Or showering. As I snuggle under my covers, I give the last one, showering, more thought. With my nose scrunched, I move it back outside the blankets and make myself a deal. The next time I wake, showering will be on the agenda. In the meantime, I prefer sleep. As my temples pound, I'm aware that this self-imposed reprieve from life can't last forever. On Monday morning, I'll need to go to work. I'll need to face Neil Butler and thank him for his faith in me. Yes, I know if he stopped by at this moment, faith wouldn't be high on his list. Pity might have a higher ranking. That's why I'm staying put under the covers, just me and my stinky self. Facing the shower means facing life, and I'm not ready to make that move. I need some more time to wallow in my own heartache. And headache. Does lack of food cause a headache? I decide to think about that later if I can come up with something to eat. Maybe I could add mustard to what's remaining of my houseplants and call it a salad. Are houseplants edible? Maybe I should Google that shit first. When Stephen and I first touched down at Heathrow, I turned on my phone long enough to see that I didn't have a return email from Trevor. I did have multiple voicemails from Kimbra, and even one from Duncan, which seemed strange. I'm assuming that he's probably simply being a good husband. Maybe one day I'll listen to them and find out what they say. Right now, I prefer the company of dreams. Dreams are truly magical places filled with memories and imagination. In dreams, I can do things I could never do in reality. I can fly. I can transport myself back to New York, to Trevor's apartment, to his fire escape. And then, in the blink of an eye, we're together in Central Park, at Serendipity 3, or in his bed. The possibilities are endless, and in dreams, the destinations aren't conscious. Each time I close my eyes, it's like an adventure waiting to happen. When I first arrived home, I turned on the television. I'm not sure why. I think it was to hear voices. Truly, I should have thought of it earlier. There were banners and flags everywhere as I Ubered home. Of course, at that time, none of it was registering. I'll blame it on the flight or the wine. Either way, it has begun. The royal wedding. The greatest display of love since Romeo and Juliet. The prince has finally found his princess. Everyone is overjoyed, and it's a big deal. The guests, crowds, royal family, and state officials. Streets are blockaded, and the masses are gathering. The festivities don't even start for a few days, but the entire world is abuzz with love. True love. I pull the covers closer to my chin. Well, screw them. It's a wonder that Stephen and I made it home. The lady arranging our flight wasn't kidding that changing our flights was out of the question. This place is a madhouse, complete with minute-by-minute coverage broadcast around the world. Unable to listen any more about the happy couple, I turned off the television. It doesn't matter. I'm sure I will be able to catch it later. There's no doubt that the live coverage will be going on for days, and after that, it will all be available on cable TV and YouTube. My lack of interest in the impending nuptials can't be blamed on my American roots. I'm actually a fan of the royals. I always have been. I even love the history. King Henry VIII, the Tudors and Windsors, the White Queen and the Red Queen. My current disinterest stems more from my melancholy mood. I almost said bitchy, but truthfully, bitchy went out the window as I walked out on Vicky's insulting offer. The energy necessary to be bitchy dissipated by the second as I bit my tongue, stopping all the words I wanted to say, smiled politely, thanked Vicky for her consideration, and told her that she and the entire lingerie division was welcome, considering the fact that Stephen and I had traveled to New York on a moment's notice, saved their show, and increased their sales. I then stood, told everyone in attendance that I would be returning to London and to Junior's, since the counter offer I'd received from Neil was too good to pass up. I then bid everyone goodbye, leaving Vicky's shitty offer sitting unsigned on the table as she stared at me with her mouth agape.
I did get the feeling she didn't know about Neil Butler's counteroffer, which gave me a smidgen of satisfaction. I left so quickly that I didn't even have a chance to say goodbye to Chantilly or others I'd come to like in the lingerie department. The truth is that I had to leave while my head was still high and eyes were without tears. Needless to say, that all changed the moment I walked out the doors and onto Fifth Avenue. Now, without the adrenaline necessary to do more, I once again surrender to dreamland. Before I slip away, I contemplate checking the time, but if I do, my rational mind will tell me that people shouldn't be sleeping at 4 on a Sunday afternoon. I'm not ready to listen to my rational mind. Besides, my body still believes that 4 in the afternoon in London is 10 in the morning in New York. The tips of my lips turn upward, and tears return to my eyes as I recall a week ago. Last Sunday, at 10 in the morning, I was still in Trevor's bed. After my little fashion show during the middle of the night, we were both out for the count. Coma by cannoli. We woke in time for another round of much sweeter lovemaking, bagels and coffee, and then a private shower concert before going to Duncan and Kimbra's. No wonder I was embarrassed when Kimbra brought up death by cannoli. I was possibly one more crazy sex round away from being a victim. But not anymore. Cannoli will only come in my dreams. I close my eyes and recall. I'm almost to that place where sleep comes, a racing reality. Bang, bang, bang. What the hell? I ask, muttering to myself as I try to decipher the sound of pounding. Is someone doing construction? Bang, bang, bang. On a Sunday? Shit. Bang, bang, bang. No, someone is knocking. No, pounding on my front door. I consider my possibilities. If I hide under my blankets, maybe whoever it is will leave. It's not exactly like I'm up for visitors. Another round of loud, annoying knocks. Maybe it's the police? Someone reported the scent of dying. I lower my nose under the blanket. No, it isn't that bad. Maybe it's Steven with food. But wouldn't he call? It's then I remember my phone is still off. For no other reason than the preservation of my houseplants and stopping them from becoming salad, because I remembered that I do have some expired salad dressing in my refrigerator that may work better than mustard if my plants aren't poisonous, I force myself to get out of bed and place one foot in front of the other. Too occupied with the banging on the door and the pounding in my head, I barely notice my haggard appearance or wrinkled sleep clothes. Steven, you'd better have food or you're fired, I yell toward the front door as I make my way down the stairs. Since my front door is solid and the small paned window to its side is frosted, it's a terrible combination to try to see who is visiting. Steven, stop! The knocks begin again, but before they get to 3, I open the door. What is your pro- Silence. I can't believe my eyes. Standing on my stoop with 2 large suitcases is the most incredibly handsome man with stunning green eyes, staring at only me. Me, who is wearing shorts and a camisole with no bra, 3-day-old hair, no makeup, and an aroma similar to rubbish that needs to be taken to the curb.
Shayna, Trevor begins, I'm sorry to come unannounced. I tried your phone and couldn't get through to you. I seem to have nowhere to stay. There's some wedding or something happening, and I was wondering if maybe you had room.
My eyes fill with tears as I wrap my arms around his neck. Trevor, how are you here? After a kiss to my cheek, he asks,
Do you think that maybe we could go inside before your neighbors decide to watch?
He moves me to arm's length.
I'm good with this outfit, but I'd like to keep your lingerie to my eyes only, if you don't mind.
He adds the last part with a wink. My head is bobbing faster than I can think. Yes, come in. How did you find me? How did you get here? There aren't any flights. Why are you here? What are you doing with suitcases? After the door closes, his finger touches my lips, stopping my questions. And then his head tilts as his gaze goes toward my hair and plucks something from its tangled depths. When he brings the crumb into view, I shrug. I think that's a chip.
A chip?
Potato. I confirm. I was eating in bed and fell asleep. He nods. Okay, I won't ask for more detail.
I look again at his luggage just before I tug him into the depth of my dark living room.
Are you avoiding daylight? Did you suddenly become a vampire?
I sent you an email, I say as my heart tightens in my chest and I avoid his questions.
And I'm replying now, here, with me.
With you?
Shayna.
He reaches for my hands.
I didn't tell you that I love you because I was trying to help the situation at Saks.
It slipped out. I didn't mean to say it. I know you had a full plate, but that doesn't mean it isn't true. I've known it since before I saw you on that stage.
I think I've known it since the morning of Duncan's wedding.
You do? Really?
I really do. I'm also not losing you again, ever.
I wrap my arms around my chest. Trevor, I'm sorry I couldn't take that offer.
I haven't made you one.
No, the one Vicky made me. I wanted to stay with you. I wanted to stay in New York, but I just couldn't do...
Again, his finger stops my word, followed by his lips, and oh God, his tongue.
I melt toward him, only to suddenly back away. Oh goodness, I'm a mess. I've done nothing but sleep and not shower. My hand covers my mouth. Or brush my teeth.
Trevor laughs. You're the most beautiful woman I know. Now, Ms. Price, may I propose my offer?
Propose your offer?
He grins. One step at a time. First, I would never want you to compromise who you are for us. That isn't who we are or who I want us to be. I'm glad you walked out on her shitty offer.
I didn't give you the details at JFK. How did you know about the shitty offer or that I walked out?
Before he can answer, I do it for him.
Steven.
Trevor nods. The thing is that McCobb has been bidding a job in Oxford. I may have seemed distracted before you left because I was hoping to tell you about it. I didn't want to give you false hope, and I was waiting on the reply. It didn't come until after you were gone.
Oxford, England?
Yes, my lady. Oxford, England. I'll need to be on site, on and off during the week. We will figure all that out, but my weekends will be free. I was only one of the engineers who worked on the proposal, but after I learned how you were being treated in New York, I applied to my boss to let me supervise the project. Then, even before it was approved, I went to Max and pushed for the funding commitment. It was a long shot, but it worked.
So, you're here now in England?
I am.
And then I recall the royal wedding. But how did you get here? Flights are booked. This city is a madhouse.
I called in one more favor.
From whom?
I called my brother.
The tears again threaten the back of my eyes. You asked Duncan to fly you to England?
What good is it to have a hotshot brother with the company plane if I never use it?
Forgetting about my lovely aroma, I reach up and wrap my arms around Trevor's neck. Of all the things you did, I get the feeling that call was the most difficult.
Trevor shrugs his wide shoulders beneath my grasp. It would have been, but since you, it wasn't. Nothing is too big of an obstacle for me to get to you. I know we could have made this work long distance. Here's the thing, my lady. I don't want to be away from you.
I shake my head. I can't believe you're really here. How long will you be here?
The spec on the project is for 2 years.
My eyes open wide. 2 years?
Trevor reaches for my waist and pulls me toward him. And after that, we'll see where life takes us. Who knows? There may be another project here.
Us? I like the way that sounds.
So do I. And as for your email, I hope you meant it.
My head bobs up and down. I meant it. I'm in love with you, too.
In love with me?
Trevor Willis, I've never been in love before. I'm not sure exactly how it works. All I know is that leaving you Friday night was the hardest thing I've ever done in my entire life. Since that moment, I've been broken, until I opened the door and saw you. Your amazing smile, eyes, hair, and thighs. I say the last part with a grin. In an instant, you put me back together.
Well, you've got all of me, even my thighs, he says, shaking his head. Do you think I could possibly find a place to stay until my project starts?
I might have a spare bedroom, I say, running my fingers through his hair.
I was thinking that sharing a room sounded more fun.
I like the sound of that, too. Lowering my chin, I lift my eyes to look through my lashes. If you don't mind staying with someone who hasn't showered.
Oh, I mind. Because, you see, I have been traveling and, well, I like showers. I was hoping that we could take one together.
On one condition, I say. Only if you promise to serenade me.
I will be glad to serenade you.
If you're staying here for the future, I don't want just one personal concert. Trevor gently places his palm on my cheek.
No, my lady. There will definitely be another one, and another one after that.
This has been an Audible Studios production of Another One. Written by Aletha Romig. Performed by Ava Erickson and Brian Polino. Executive producers Rena Ayer and Mike Charzik. Producer Chelsea Pita. Copyright 2018 by Romig Works, LLC. Sound recording copyright 2018 by Audible, Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible, Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.